Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast by Opus Partners. I'm your host, Steve Knight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And it's our show. We're talking about, can you buy a house with a 10% deposit? And when it comes to deposits, how low can you go? So we're going to go through all of the details. And the main reason I wanted to bring this up is that saving a deposit or getting a deposit to start with can be a really tough hurdle. Did you know if you're a first home buyer, CoreLogic are estimating it takes about 9.3 years now to save up a 20% deposit.
Is that starting now? So if you started today, or is that going back 9 years?
This is if you're starting today and you want to save up a 20% deposit for today's house prices, bearing in mind that house prices go up over time, 9.3 years is what they're currently estimating.
It's quite a long time.
And so one of the big questions a lot of people listening to the show ask is, well, can I get in with a lower deposit? And the answer is sometimes yes. So Andrew, what sort of deposits are possible?
Okay, so if you're a first-home buyer, officially you need a 20% deposit, which is a lot of money. If you're in Auckland, say, you're buying a $1 million house, you need $200,000. I can understand that that would take 9 years. If you're a new build investor, again, it's 20% deposit. Now, under both of those examples, you may be able to get a lower deposit. So with a first-home buyer, sometimes you can get away with a 10% deposit. If you're a new build investor, sometimes 10%, a lot of times I've more likely seen 15% deposit. Now, this is because there's official rules, but then there's some exceptions that the banks are allowed to make outside of those rules. And the LVR restrictions say that 15% of the bank's total lending to home buyers or investors can be with less than a 20% deposit. So banks have got a little bit of leeway to lend money at lower deposits. Now with new build, either investors or even owner-occupiers, like first-home buyers that are buying under a new build contract, there are no LVR rules. So technically, the bank could lend you 100%. They're not going to, but they can technically do that and it doesn't count towards that 15% buffer that they've got.
Yeah, and it's probably important to point out as well, if you're an investor wanting to buy an existing property, so one that already exists, currently need a 35% deposit, but again, there is some leeway, very small leeway for the banks to be able to lend outside of those rules so you can get in with a lower deposit. I think for investors, it's about 5% of their book and not a lot of it goes on. They don't do a lot of low deposit lending, but there is some. But there are some catches there. But just before we get into the catches and the gotchas and what you need to have or what you need to accept if you are going to use a low deposit, you know, when is this useful, Andrew? What sort of investors or first home buyers would really benefit from that lower deposit?
So I think investors first. So I can think of a friend of mine that was buying off plans. They borrowed 20% from their bank. They were planning to borrow 80% from a new bank, so split banking. Came up to completion. Valuation was ordered at the end. Value had dropped. Rather than put more equity reliance on their own house, they actually borrowed 85% now with the second bank. And they had to pay some extra lender's mortgage insurance, which we'll get into. But it meant that they could still have those properties completely separate.
Yeah, so the main benefit there is we're talking about a property that they'd bought, you know, new build under construction, get to the end, value's dropped. If they don't settle, they're going to lose their deposit.
Or they're going to come up with more cash, right?
Yeah, and so instead of having to put more cash in, they've said, actually, bank, let's not put any more cash in, but we're going to go for a lower deposit option. So, yeah. Okay, I can see that would be beneficial.
Now, I'll give you another example of first-home buyers. So often what people mistake when they're buying their first home is they think they can put in a deposit, i.e. the 20%, and then they can top up their mortgage to cover other debts, which you can't do, right? You have to take that off of your deposit. So in this case, because he wants to buy a new build, I said to him, well, why don't you apply for a loan at 90% rather than the 80% that he was going to, keep the extra 10% to clear the other debts that you've got.
Yeah, okay, that's really interesting. And just before we get into, again, the additional cost of this, let's just talk about how much low deposit lending really goes on. Now, I've got the data out of the Reserve Bank, and we can see that first home buyers get the bulk of low deposit lending. Now, when we say low deposit lending, we're talking about buying with less than a 20% deposit for the bank. So if we look at the most recent month, which is February 2024, 34% of first home buyers had less than a 20% deposit. So one in three first home buyers are getting low deposit lending.
You might be thinking, well, hang on a minute. I thought there was a limit of 15%. Why is that?
Well, it's because banks are looking at their total loan book. So they're saying 15% of all the loans we give out to owner occupiers can be at less than a 20% deposit. And they are choosing, or because the demand is there, most of that lending just goes to first home buyers. So we say 33% or a third of first home buyers are getting a lower deposit. But if we look at just other owner occupiers, it's far less. It's 1 in 25 or 4% of other home buyers who aren't first home buyers are getting that low deposit lending.
And when you think about this, that's because getting on the ladder the first time is the most challenging because you have to have saved up your deposit and that takes you 9 years or however long it takes you. But first home buyers are typically in a unique position when it comes to income where they've got double income, they might not have any kids yet, so they suffer on deposit, but what they suffer in deposit, they make up in income.
You probably also have just the demand of it. First home buyers want lower deposits. Once you've been in the market for a bit, your house has gone up in value, you've paid off some debt, maybe you don't need that low deposit lending anymore. You don't want to pay those additional costs, which we'll talk about in a minute, and therefore you just don't go for those kinds of loans. If we look at investors, we see even fewer investors getting access to these really, really low deposit loans. So in February, it was about 0.6%. So somewhere between 1 in 50 to 1 in 200 investors are buying a property with less than a 20% deposit. Now, there's some reasons for this that we were talking about off air.
Well, I think the biggest thing is most people who are investors probably have equity in another property. The other thing is if you're an investor who is buying an existing property and you need to have a 35% deposit and you go to the bank and say, hey, look, I want to fit outside of that, I want to fall under the exemptions, that 15% buffer that you've got, well, if...
Well, 5% buffer for investors.
Sorry, 5% for investors. If you want to fall into that category, you're not going to pay any penalties on the higher interest rate. Whereas if you're an investor who's borrowing 90%, you're going to pay much higher interest rates. And investors are probably pretty sensitive towards costs at the moment.
Yeah, it's a bit more simple than that as well. If you think about this, people buying an existing property, currently the deposit requirement is 35%. Well, it's very unlikely that the bank is going to let you buy an existing property with less than a 20% deposit. You know, for being a low deposit investor buying an existing property, you might only have a 25% deposit. Well, those people wouldn't get into this category because this is less than 20%. So this isn't number of investors who borrow outside of the LVR rules. It's investors who not only borrow outside of the LVR rules, but with less than a 20% deposit. And so I think a lot of these people would probably be new build investors and not all investors buy new build. So that's the reason it's really low. So I talked to Peter Norris, who's the managing director at Opus Mortgages, and just said, well, how much low deposit lending is going on for investors? And he was saying that BNZ will lend up to 90% LVR for new builds. So that's a 10% deposit or more. ANZ and ASB, they'll go to 85%, which means you need a 15% deposit or more. And same with Kiwi Bank. All the others won't do any low deposit lending for new builds at all. And he was saying that maybe 1 in 50 of our investors, who all, generally speaking, buy new builds, about 1 in 50 or 2% of them would go for a low deposit. But he was saying, well, maybe some people just don't know it's possible. And then again, a lot of people would tend to dip into that if they bought a property off the plans, they didn't follow our usual process now that we've got today, and then need to borrow more because the valuation of that property has gone down. So happens a bit for investors, maybe could be a little bit more if people knew about it, but maybe 2% of people at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing, actually. If people automatically discount themselves from not being able to borrow at a higher LVR, they probably don't even apply for a mortgage or even put an offer on a property.
Because they don't think it's possible. Now, really important to remember as well that there are some downsides too. So if I get a high LVR loan, Andrew, what happens?
Yeah, you pay a higher interest rate, or sometimes you can pay a fee depending on the lender you're going with. And because of that, if your interest rate's going to be higher, your cash flow is going to be worse. Often as well, you might be principal and interest, not interest only. So you might have to be paying that mortgage down at a 25-year loan term or a 30-year loan term. So those two things might make your cash flow significantly worse. Okay, so let's say a first-home buyer is entering the market buying a property worth $800,000. If they put in a 20% cash deposit, then their mortgage is going to be $640,000, and they're going to get a pretty standard interest rate. So we'll call that 6.9% at the moment. Now, your weekly principal and interest repayments on that are $972 per week. If you enter the market with a 10% cash deposit, so now you're borrowing a higher amount, $720,000, your interest rate will also be higher and probably closer to 8%, so 7.99% for that. The weekly repayment jumps up to $1,217 per week. So that's a difference of almost $250 a week. So quite a lot more that you have to pay.
Yeah, and that's because there's a bit of a double whammy there. First of all, because you're using a lower deposit, you're taking out a larger mortgage. And on top of that larger mortgage, you've also got that higher interest rate. In this case, you're talking about an extra 1.1%. And at a time when interest rates are quite high, that's where it starts to really stretch first home buyers getting in there. Now, of course, the benefit is you don't have to put in an extra $80,000 of cash. So your deposit is $80,000 less. But that comes with some additional costs there.
Yeah, and if you think about, okay, let's say that 9 years was correct and you could save half of that at Mountain, let's just call it 5 years, right? If it's going to take you another 4 years to get into the housing market, you might say, yeah, okay, an extra $245 a week is expensive now, but to be able to own our house today, that has more benefit.
Okay, well, let's talk about investors, because this is where it gets interesting. With investors, generally speaking, you're not putting in a cash deposit, you're borrowing the money against your own property. So in this example, let's say buying an $800,000 property again with a 20% or a 10% deposit there. In this case, I'm actually saying the mortgage is still $800,000 because you're borrowing all of the money to invest, which would be pretty standard. In this case, you've got a higher interest rate. But on top of that, I'm saying that with a normal deposit, that's going to be interest only. But if you have a low deposit, you know, generally the bank is going to make you pay principal and interest on that. Is that what you've seen, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then so from a cash flow perspective, even though your mortgage is the same, because you've got a higher interest rate and because you're paying principal and interest, it's going to cost you about an extra $291 a week in this example.
And when you're thinking about the fact that top-ups at the moment are very high for most people, if you're entering the market now or you've been in for the last couple of years while interest rates are high, you know, adding that double whammy of the higher interest rate and the principal and interest, even though it's the same mortgage amount, really adds insult to injury.
Now, some people will look at this and say, oh, this is great, I'm going to be able to buy an extra property when I couldn't before because maybe I can get that lower deposit, and a small number of investors and a large amount of first home buyers are actually doing that. Some people will look at this though and say that's not worth it because it's very expensive and I can't actually afford that. So it just depends what side of the coin you kind of fall on. And Andrew, let's say that someone wants to get in now, they want to get in with a 10% deposit or a 15% deposit. I think a lot of people are going to be asking, well, what do I need to do to get my mortgage application over the line?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is you've got to be a really strong applicant. So what I mean by that is don't have any defaults on your power bills or don't have missed credit card payments. Make sure you have as minimal consumer debt as possible. So if you've got personal loans, credit cards, if you've got car loans, maybe bundle them up in a debt consolidation loan if you have to still have them and look at making as many payments as possible towards that until you do buy your house. And just make it as tidy an application as possible. And again, I'd be using a mortgage broker to help you do that.
Yeah, the other thing is it all comes down to the income side of your application, right? So if you've got low debt and you've got really strong income, it's more likely that you'll get that lower deposit approved. If you're a bit tighter on income, it's less likely that you're going to get that lower deposit approved. You've got to need more of that equity in there.
And definitely from my experience as well, if you're thinking about going self-employed or you are self-employed at the moment, maybe just get a regular job to try and get into a house. If that's more important to you, then make that sacrifice right now. I've got one investor I'm working with and she's self-employed at the moment. She's just gone and got a job in the same industry. Yes, it's less pay for her, but it's more usable income from the bank's perspective. They're far more likely to be able to get into the market now.
Yeah, the other thing that's just important, if you're thinking about getting that across the line, for most banks, they need you to have a live deal. So you're very unlikely to walk into a bank and get a pre-approval for a 10% deposit. But if you sign a contract so that it's what we call a live deal, the bank's actually got something to assess and say, okay, this person actually wants to buy a property. It's not a, we'll pre-approve them and maybe they'll buy something, maybe they won't. Most banks need it to be a live deal, a signed contract before they'll assess, you know, are we going to give you a 10% deposit or not? My mortgage brokers were also saying that it's more likely that your existing bank is going to give it to you rather than a new bank. So I currently bank with quite a few banks, actually. ASB, Westpac, I actually think BNZ might be in there as well, and TSB. So those banks are more likely to give me a lower deposit compared to if I walk to Kiwi Bank. I'm not a customer of Kiwi Bank. they're less likely to give me those lower deposit loans. So you've just got to weigh it all up. Last question that we've got to just answer is, let's say you sign up for that higher interest rate, Andrew, 7.99% in the example we just gave. How do I get rid of that and then go back to a normal interest rate?
So that's once your equity gets under that 80% threshold. So that can happen in two ways. Either your mortgage is paid down under the 80% or the property has gone up. So you've got more than 20% equity or 20% equity in that property. Now, those two things can happen simultaneously. If you're on a 85% loan and you're diligently paying your loan down over the year and the house goes up in value, then obviously those two things work to have more equity.
Might you need to get a valuation in that case to say how valuable your property is to get rid of it?
Yes, but you might be able to do that with an online valuation. So some banks will accept an online valuation. So that might cost $50 or a couple of hundred dollars compared to a full valuation of $1,000.
And what about if I fixed in? So let's say that I fixed in for 3 years or something like that with that higher interest rate. Am I able to get rid of that higher, what we call the low equity premium, the higher interest rate, even though I fixed for 3 years?
It's my understanding that you can.
Talk to a mortgage broker.
Yeah, talk to a mortgage broker, but it's my understanding that you can, but it might be specific from bank to bank, or I could be completely wrong.
Right, let's wrap it up there, but it wouldn't be the first time. Right, let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. It really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, if you're listening to the audio version of this and you want to see some of the graphs we're sharing here, just Google Opus Partners YouTube. It'll be the first thing that comes up. But if you are watching on YouTube, make sure you hit the subscribe button. We release new YouTube videos every Monday and Wednesday. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Knight.
I'm Andrew Nicholl.
We've got to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics, and insights to help you get the most out of the property market. Until next time.